this week on the Red Sneaker Writers Podcast.
I would give the advice of make sure that your promise to your reader that you see it all the way through from the start to the finish. And sometimes we don't know exactly what that promise to the reader is when we're initially drafting it or whatever, but it's just whatever you say that you're going to deliver to the reader at the time, just make sure that you see it all the way through.
Welcome to the Red Sneaker Writers Podcast. News, interviews, and writing tips for people who are serious about having a writing career and want some practical knowledge to help them achieve it. Your host is the nationally best-selling author of more than 50 books, William Bernhardt.
Hello, sneakers. All right, first of all, I got something I got to say. You know, I often end this podcast by talking and encouraging people to post reviews and rate the podcast. It helps people find us, all of which is true. And many of you have in the past. We've had great stuff from David Corbley and James from Waco. But this week, we got a review from LP2009. I don't know who that is. I don't know if you're male or female. But it was this wonderful five-star review about how you discovered the podcast. You're watching all the old ones now while you do chores around the house and whatnot. It was wonderful. But here's the quote. Here's the part I just got a quote. It says, "And the host does a great job of interviewing. I really look forward to the housework now." I mean, come on. Everybody likes a stroke every now and again, but likes housework? That's saying quite a bit. So many thanks to LP2009. I got an email actually from somebody listening to it talking about needing to skip sometimes and wishing there was a way to do it, which made me think I should point out this podcast does have chapter breaks if you're listening to the audio edition. I mean, I think you should listen to the whole thing, you know, several times, probably beginning to end. But if you need to skip ahead, you're not in the mood for news and you want the interview or vice versa, it's got chapter breaks. You can fast forward cleanly. The first chapter is usually the intro where Jesse and I chatter. The second part is the news. The third part's the interview. And the fourth part is whatever I say at the very end. Jesse, you both listen to and produce podcasts. Do you think people actually use chapter breaks?
I mean, they do. I do. I listen to a couple of different Star Trek podcasts. One of them, the two hosts spend a good hour just like chit chatting before they even start the episode review. And pretty much the only chapter break is when they start talking about the actual episode. And I usually do click that. I mean, as a producer of podcasts, I can tell you, I don't use chapter breaks only because my podcast host doesn't have that function yet. And also at least for my podcast, it would be very hard to make chapter breaks because it's sort of like a jam band conversation. It sort of segues from thing to thing and it'd be hard and take a lot of time to figure out what the topics are. But a lot of, especially like segmented podcasts like this one are pretty easy to chapter break. And we probably should be doing that with the YouTube videos too. If we're allowed to go back in once there.
Can you do that? I use a program called Podcast Chapters to put the chapters in the audio version. I wouldn't know how to do it on video.
I think it's part of the back end of YouTube. So I'll look into that for us because it shouldn't be that hard. Cause I know YouTube videos have chapters. I see them all the time now.
I'm not hassling you about the Star Trek podcasts. I love Star Trek. I listen to board game podcasts, but sometimes, you know, if there's a chart, we're going to discuss this at this time. I'll think, no, I don't like that game. I don't want to hear about that and skip it. So, you know, it is useful anyway. All right. My interviewed guest today is Yasmin Engo, a new author who is taking the publishing world by storm. Her debut novel, Her Name is Night, features an elite assassin heroine on a mission to topple a human trafficking ring and avenge her family. It actually goes on sale on November 1st, but you can pre-order it right now. Yasmin is from Northern Virginia, but I think she's in South Carolina, at least today. She's a first-generation Ghanaian American who taught English in middle schools and high schools for years and received the 2020 Eleanor Taylor Bland Award for Emerging Writers of Color. She is living the dream of many Red Sneaker writers, and I want to talk to her about that. But first, the news. So here's my headline for item number one. A renowned female crime novelist who won a million euro prize in Spain turned out to be three middle-aged men. Okay, go with me on this one-of-a-kind story. There's been a lot of speculation about the identity of one of Spain's most prominent crime thriller writers who wrote under the name of Carmen Mola and has attracted a lot of attention. In Spain, apparently, only about 10% of all authors are women. And the bio indicated that she was a professor and then at nighttime was writing these kind of bloody and violent thrillers that were very popular. Well, last week, a forthcoming book called The Beast by this author won the prestigious 2021 Premio Planeta Literary Prize, which, as I said, is worth a million euros for an unreleased book. And they announced the winner. You can see the picture right there if you're watching the video version. And three guys, Jorge Diaz, Agustin Martinez, and Antonio Bachero stood up. These are all known authors. They've written a lot of television scripts, but they decided to write these books under a pseudonym. Why? Here's a quote. "It hasn't escaped anyone's notice that the idea of a university professor and mother of three who taught algebra classes in the morning and then wrote ultra-violent macabre novels in scraps of free time in the afternoon made for a great marketing operation." Needless to say, much controversy ensued. Honestly, I don't know what to think about this. Jesse, what do you think? Is this a fair PR scheme or have their readers been duped?
I feel like there are acceptable times your nom de plume can be a different gender. And I feel like that's when you're in a situation, for example, you are a female writer and you're having problems getting published. So you give yourself a male nom de plume, or you're two men and you give yourself one single man's name. Like James S.A. Corey, the writer of the Expanse series.
Right.
This feels a little gross.
Well, we have a long history, after all, of women sort of masking their gender with initials. J.K. Rowling comes to mind, although pretty soon everybody knew who she was because the books were so popular. Actually, back in the day, virtually all women who wrote in the golden age of science fiction used some kind of male pseudonym because the completely wrong idea was that, you know, this only men wrote this stuff and they'd read this stuff and they'd only read books written by men. So, you know, pseudonyms. But this one does seem sort of like they not only created a false name, but a whole fake identity sell the book.
There's more to this than them just, it's not like it was an accident or they thought it was funny for a day and then just ran with it like a rom-com situation. Like they gave this woman author a backstory that was a very appealing backstory, and so you know it feels very like, you know, middle, like boomer privilegey.
What you said makes me think it's like the bosom buddies of the book world, you know,
just like how bosom buddies has not aged well.
And no, I don't think it would play well at all today. No.
Even though they enjoyed it growing up, but
seems skeezy.
Yeah. Also, for our listeners, in case you're curious, a million euros would be $1.12 million.
Holy smokes! So even split three ways, that's money.
Yeah, I guess the joke's on them for it being three of them, and they have to split that prize. But still, a goodly amount of money.
Yeah, you pay a few bills with that. Okay, item number two, which is equally unexpected, although a happier story. This takes place in Ireland. As you may know, Ireland has been a tax haven for writers and really all artists for a long time because writers don't pay tax. It's not that simple. You've got to qualify. You've got to have lived there for several years. But many writers, successful writers, have moved to Ireland. I think Anne McCaffrey, for one, just to take advantage of this. Well, it just got even better because now Ireland has started a pilot program, 3 years for the pilot, that's going to pay all artists, including writers, a weekly payment of 325 euros a week. Not as much as those three guys got for writing under a pseudonym, but still a significant, people are calling it a game changer. Artists who typically have a hard time struggling to succeed, they have to, you know, probably wanted to teach like our guest today taught, or practice law like I did, waiting for the books to take off. But now they've got a basic income guarantee scheme to allow them to do their work and make sure they don't starve to death. A government rep said this, quote, sends a message to artists living and working in Ireland that their work is valued, appreciated, and necessary. So what do you think, Jesse? See this happening in the U.S. anytime soon?
I mean, not anytime soon, but I think something like this, I mean, this something like this happened during, was it during World War II? Like, you know, there was the sort of WPA project, right?
During the Depression.
Yeah, during the Depression, yeah. And a lot of great cultural things came out of that. And I...
It's true.
I think considering that it's... I did another Google search. That would be $446 a week. That's still not a lot of money. So I think if people could get over the, you know, the basic income part of it, and was just like supporting artists so they can be artists, you know,
right.
I think eventually ideas like this will catch on, probably states first or even cities first, mm-hmm. not like nationally, but it is a great way to at least give them something so they can buy groceries and possibly health insurance.
Right. Might still need a roommate, but you're not going to starve. I mean, it harkens back to the old days of patronage, mm-hmm. which usually came with strings attached, but that really doesn't exist in our world anymore. There are a lot of programs under the new Biden proposals, but I haven't heard of any that pertain to helping authors survive.
Yeah, it'd be nice. Listen, I would happily move to a country that had this for podcasters. So.
Oh, yeah, there you go. Well, Ireland has a long history of supporting the arts and supporting their art. And it's why, because they, you know, they support their own in a way. You know, many states have a poet laureate. In Oklahoma, we supposedly have a poet laureate, but they haven't appointed a new one in something like 4 years. And they removed the salary that the Oklahoma Poet Laureate get. I mean, it was a whopping $5,000 for the entire term, which would be either 1 or 2 years. But now they don't even do that. It's just a title and but zero financial support.
Well, I don't think we're breaking news by saying Ireland more supportive of artists than Oklahoma.
Yeah, possibly. All right, one last item: a social media app just for authors. What do you think? A woman named Allison Trowbridge has proposed and is apparently preparing to launch a new social media app called Copper. Yes, like the metal, Copper, because she wanted to have something that helps authors exchange ideas and deal with this changing publishing world. She says it's going to disrupt the publishing industry, although I'm not really clear on that part. She talked about in this article about how it was in Forbes. So, you know, she's apparently getting some financial support, but she talks about when she was preparing, writing, and publicizing her first book, she was very frustrated with all the difficulties in bringing a book to market and the what she calls shameless self-promotion that an author is supposed to do. Quote, the platforms that exist really serve readers, but not authors. That's why you see authors struggling to dance on TikTok or do Instagram reels. It requires a very different skill set. Again, Jesse, I got to turn to you that because this is really more your field of expertise than mine. Do authors need their own platform? Do you see this being a hit?
I mean, I think this is a great idea. Two, I don't think it's going to work. And I don't think it's going to work because people are already sort of maxed out on apps to check in on. And so anytime you're asking people to join a new thing, like it's a very hard sell these days. if there are ways, and I was looking on the website, which is copperbooks.com. Yes, copperbooks.com. If it's all the things that like Goodreads could have been, right? Yeah. Where like you actually can interact with the author, I think there would definitely be space for that. You know, because, you know, authors, just like everybody else, have fans, and those fans want to meet and get to know said authors.
Right.
But it has to survive long enough for people to find it.
Goodreads is so complicated. I was there this morning because, as you know, my new book came out yesterday. That's Exposed, the second Kinsey book. And the page seems so busy. I have a hard time. Oh, thanks. I have a hard time even, you know, navigating it. It's nice. Of course, it connects well to Amazon because Amazon owns it, but it's kind of hard to navigate.
I would say every time I finish a book on my Kindle and I try to rate it on Goodreads, it never works. So any system that works better than that, I'm for, because I would like to tell authors I like their stuff.
If you go by Goodreads, the only thing I ever read are comic books, because the only thing, not that there's anything wrong with that, but that's because on my iPad, I buy them, not just for myself, but so that's the only thing that shows up on my Goodreads page. I mean, I remember the Field of Dreams line, if you build it, they will come, but I don't know if I think most authors want less to do with social media, not more. But I guess we'll see. All right. Interestingly enough, my fantastic interview guest this time connects one way or another with all three of these news stories, because she's also got a debut book. She doesn't need a pseudonym, but she's getting all kinds, even without a new social media app, she's getting all kinds of rave reviews and Publishers Weekly. And look, on the cover, you see that great quote from David Baldacci. She is doing very well. Yasmin Engo, please welcome to the podcast. How you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
Just great. You're coming to us from South Carolina, is that right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I appreciate that very much. So, traditional first question on the podcast, if you could give writers out there listening any piece of advice, one piece of advice, pick one, what would it be?
I would give the advice of make sure that your promise to your reader, that you see it all the way through from the start to the finish. And sometimes we don't know exactly what that promise to the reader is when we're initially drafting it or whatever, but it's just whatever you say that you're going to deliver to the reader at the time, just make sure that you see it all the way through. And it's something that I always constantly have to work with them. And when I'm working as a developmental editor and working with other authors, that's also something that I try to remember.
Sure. This first book of yours, Her Name is Night, is indeed, it's not even technically out yet as we record this. It's a few days before release, but it's got the most stellar lineup of reviews and endorsements I have ever seen. How long did you spend writing this thing?
So it took me, I started it in 2018 and then finished it around the summer of 2019. But I had been kicking it around in my head for several years before that. I just didn't know how I was going to execute it. And it wasn't coming to me yet as, you know, just how I wanted to do it. I kind of had the character in my mind. I just didn't know what her story was going to be yet. So in 2018, I was just like, you know what, I'm just going to start. I was writing women's fiction or trying to write women's fiction prior to that. So then in 2018, I was like, you know what, I'm going to write what's really on my, you know, what I really, really like to read and watch, which is thriller, horror, all those kinds of things. And so I just kind of started it then.
I can relate. You remind me of my own, you know, when I started, I was going to write this brilliant bit of literary fiction, which oddly enough was later published and didn't change the world, but that wasn't going anywhere. So I thought, how about a mystery? I think maybe I could handle a mystery. And of course that's changed everything. So this book is out. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got a story that's not completely unlike those the first news item I talked about, except in your case, the story is actually true. you actually were a teacher and you were an editor and you really are female. Right, and here's your first novel, right?
Yes, so and I really have kids too and all of that. So
well, and we all know how much time that takes out of your day. And somehow you found time to write. How'd you manage that?
I don't know. I got very little sleep. I really had to work on my writing during my breaks, at work, I try to be an early writer, like writing first thing in the morning, but I just can't get myself into that. So it's usually during my breaks, lunch. And then when I get home and the kids were squared away, and by 2018, they were pretty old anyway, teens. So after dinner, then I had time that evening to write. And so that's pretty much, and then on weekends all day, I would write. So that's pretty much how I did it. Anywhere I could, I could fit it in is where I got it in.
Do you have a regular schedule? Do you make yourself write every day? Or that may not even be possible in the life you're living right now.
But. Yeah, no, I try though, because I just like with outlines, something about structure really makes me kind of nervous. So I really write just when I feel really creative and really compelled, which for the most part is like every day. But like, there'll be days that I haven't, like I didn't write today because I just didn't feel compelled to do it. I mean, it just really has to come to me, and I have to feel, it's like an urgency. You got to get these words down. And so that's where I feel like my writing sounds the best, is when I'm writing when I really, really want to do it. And so that's, that's typically how I do it. So there's no set time. But if I'm on deadline, like I had to do with book two, then I did make myself write every day, especially when I got closer to deadline, because I couldn't push it, any further. So I made, I made sure that I wrote every evening, and definitely on the weekends is when I really kind of like got it in.
Well, I think that's a sign of your dedication. That would never work for me. I can always think of something that sounds more fun than writing, but I have been at it for a while. That might be a factor, but I have to set my time and make myself go do it. So you didn't outline this at all, because this is a pretty intricate little thriller. There's a lot going on. Yeah. And no outline, you just,
pantsed it? I pantsed it the whole way through, and then after I did the zero draft, then I went back and then put in the parts that I felt, were missing. Well, there were a lot of parts, but yeah, I just wrote all the way through.
Yeah. I'm getting, this isn't your first draft. If it is, you're the best first drafter in the history of writing,
right. Yeah, that wouldn't be me.
But still, you went through it without an outline. That's really pretty impressive, Yeah. So you've written this book. I know you have an agent. How did you find the agent? How did you find the publisher? What happened next?
Yeah, so let's see. So I finished in 2019, and I was with another agent at that time who was trying to sell my women's fiction. And I decided that, we had different vision. So I parted ways and decided I was just going to try fresh with this new story that was like a story of my heart. And I just knew, I was like, people are going to love it and it's going to be great and all this other stuff. And I was going to start January of 2020. So January of 2020, I started querying, and the rejections just kept coming in. And I had so many rejections, and it wasn't until maybe like May, early June is when I got interest from my current agent now, Melissa Edwards. And by that time, I was like about to quit. I told myself, I must not be good, because the story that I just knew that people were going to love, nobody loves it. They're all telling me no. Right. And I don't know why they're telling me no. Like, there's no concrete something that they're saying that I need to fix. So maybe I just suck. And I'm just going to quit. And and then right about the time, I had queried her before that, before I had decided I was going to quit. So it was with her, and I was like, I'm just going to quit. And then one of my friends in one of my writing groups, crime writers of color. She was like, hey, you know, there's this contest, this Eleanor Taylor Bland Award with Sisters in Crime. Why don't you, you know, submit? And I was like, yeah, I don't know. And I said, fine, I'll just do this one more thing. I'm just going to do this one more thing. And I'll submit, even though I'm not going to win. It's just because I never win anything. Nothing good ever happens to me and I'm going to quit. And so I did. I submitted it. And then I forgot about it because I just knew I was going to lose. And then, or like I said, late May, early June, then Melissa emailed me and was like, hey, you want to jump on a call? And I was like, what? Like someone wants to talk to me, an agent? What? And like, so she offered and I was just like, oh my gosh, wow. You know, and I was so proud about that. Then I was checking my email like a week later and I saw that I had like an email sitting there talking about, you know, you're a winner. And I thought it was a spam. And I was like, oh my gosh, this stupid spam. I was about to put it in the junk mail. And so I didn't read it for some days and I was about to put it in the junk mail and delete it. And I was like, let me look at it again. And it turned out to be, you know, like for real, you're a winner. And that's how I found out that I won the award. And everything went quickly from there. Yeah.
Sorry. But the award didn't help you get the agent, if I'm following the story correctly.
The agent came before the award. Yeah. Right before the award.
And the agent came from an email query?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think everybody listening to this is going to want a copy of your email query because you must have, you know, people do drafts and drafts and drafts of those things trying to get it right. And apparently you did. Did you have a special technique or trick or what was
it? No, because remember, I was getting like rejections all the time. So I was like, I suck at email. I don't do well with pitches. I don't do well with trying to whittle my, you know, 400 page book down into like three paragraphs on a letter. Right. You know what I mean? And and sounds like this is why I didn't go into marketing because I just am so bad at it. And so I was surprised too. So she must have seen something, you know, in there that. In that mess of a query that, you know, sparked her interest. But yeah, she came before the award. So,
well, that's fantastic. Mm-hmm. That's the dream come true, I know, for many listening. And while I'm thinking of it, let me say, I can see some people are watching this live. If you would like to ask Yasmin a question, please just type it into the chat box and I'll see it or Jesse will flag it so that I have no choice but to see it and we'll see that she answers the question. Mm-hmm. So this book, you know, most people's first book is, you know, the protagonist is a thinly veiled version of themselves. Mm-hmm. And this book involves a female assassin. So mm-hmm. I assume that's basically you. Am I right about that?
Oh, who, me? Oh, no, I haven't. If that happened, I can't say. No, absolutely not that, you know, but no. I mean, there's definitely elements, you know, because she's from Ghana. And so that's where my parents were from. They immigrated here from there. And I definitely wanted to highlight my culture with this book. And that was one of the things that really sparked me when I was when I started writing it in 2018 is by that time I was dealing with the death of my dad. He had been he had passed a few years prior to that. And so I was dealing with that grief. So a lot of the themes that you see in the book are things that I was dealing with at that time, grief and relationships with fathers, great relationships with fathers. I wanted to really highlight our culture because that was something I didn't see in these books that I was reading and these movies that I was watching was a protagonist that was so much like John Wick and Jason Bourne and Jack Reacher and all of them. But, you know, they didn't like look like me. And they definitely weren't from, you know, a place like Ghana. So those are the things that I wanted to write about. The one thing that is similar between me and Nina, the protagonist, is we both like lemon pepper chicken wings. So when you read that, you know that there is that the author likes that. And so some of my friends, when they read it, they're like, oh, she put the lemon pepper. I can't help it. I love them. Sorry.
So there is an autobiographical element here. Mm-hmm. Now, was there research involved? I read that you grew up maybe in Virginia. So had you been to Ghana or had you just heard parents' stories or what?
It was a little bit of both. So I lived in Ghana for a couple of years when I was very young, so my parents could finish school. And then I went back again with my dad several years later to see family and everything like that. But a lot of the stories and everything came from my mom. My mom told me just about all of that, and my dad too. And also, yes, I grew up in Virginia, but Virginia, that whole DC area has a really big immigrant culture. And a lot of Ghanaians come there to the DC area to go to school and to work and things like that. So when I was growing up, I actually, you know, was like in two different cultural worlds. We had, my aunties and my uncles all over the place. And you know, that's who we really socialized with. And then when I'm at school, then I have my American friends and things. So it was a little, it was different, but it was definitely something that, that really helped me to become like who I am today.
And then there's the part about the being an assassin. How did you research that?
Well, that came from just a lot of, I did a lot of search on the internet. Watched.
Are we talking dark web here? Or?
No, not dark web. No. But I mean, you know, I guess people would, if they saw my history, they would be like, you know, what's going on with that? I did, you know, I asked questions of, I have some a friend who's in law enforcement. So I asked him, you know, questions regarding weapons and things like that. And I had some friends who take not self-defense, but like karate and those kind of fighting courses and MMA, that kind of stuff is what they do. And so I asked them about like different fighting elements. I looked up Krav Maga, which is something that the main character that's her fighting style. Well, she tries to or whatever. And so I did a whole lot of research in that aspect. And then also things that I was watching and then books that I was reading as well. And so, I mean, I tried very hard to make sure that what I was writing it made sense. It made sense to me. And so I would, you know, write it and then I would sometimes like actually try to act out the scenes. So it would be weird when I have family member walk by and I'm like in this position, or I have this, you know, I don't have a knife, but I have my pen and I'm like this. And they're like, what are you doing? And I'm like, this is research. And I look very serious. Yeah. And, you know, so I'm a method writer. That's what I am. I'm a method writer.
Okay. Those who may be just listening to this on audio, you just missed out on Yasmin bringing this book to life. So you might want to check out the video later on YouTube.
You see my fighting moves.
Yeah. We got a question here from Sharon, who is also a writer of color, I know, and a wonderful person. And she's asking, first she says that your journey to publication was pure destiny. And then she asks, what inspired you to write?
Oh, wow. Yeah. So what inspired me to write was, if we're talking about way back in the day when I was in middle school, and that's when I really started to write, what inspired me to write was because I was lonely. I was an only child. And, you know, like I said, I was a little different because I had a different, you know, my home life was a little different from everyone else's. And so I wanted to write things and be in imaginary worlds and things like that. And my mom was, you know, working like two jobs at a time. So, and I was with babysitters. So the only way to really entertain myself, if I didn't want to watch soaps with my babysitter, was to write and to read. And so I just really put myself in a world of reading. And then I just decided I'm going to write my own stories. And, you know, my imagination was so big. And so that's really that's what inspired me to write. And writing is cathartic for me. So even when I don't, when you were asking, like, do you write every day or whatever, when I don't write, even when I don't write, I'm still thinking about writing. So I literally think about writing 24/7. And when I don't write for too long, I start to feel bad. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I need to be writing. And I don't feel right until I start writing. So I really should make myself write every day, because then that's when I really, it's like a release and I get a lot of things out. But yeah, definitely. If it's not, if if that's not what I'm doing writing literally, then I'm thinking about it all the time.
Yeah, that's a story I think a lot of people, yes, can relate to. That seems very, very real. So does your female assassin in the book cook? Because I understand you do.
I at one point I wanted to be a chef, but I just, you know, I didn't do it. But no, she does not cook, actually.
Well, maybe later. Is there going to be a sequel to this book?
There is a sequel, yeah.
Yeah, I thought that might be the case. Well,
but
maybe
there won't
later.
Be cooking in that one either.
No, not still her, not.
No,
you're going to have to, well, maybe in the supporting cast. And then pretty soon you'll have recipes in the back of the book. And mm-hmm. No, maybe not. But you do like to cook. What's your best dish?
I mean, every dish that I try is the best dish, except for fried chicken. I cannot fry chicken. I just don't know what it is. I can't bread it right, so I can't do that. But and just about anything that I try, I'm pretty successful with it. And I just attribute that to I went to culinary school, and because like I was going to be a chef at one point. And so I think I attribute it to that. But I mean, I do love cooking. Cooking is another thing that is like a release for me when I have time mm-hmm. to do it.
Right.
Then I'm there and I'm, yeah. Yes, exactly. But I don't do that every day either. I do that less than I do writing probably.
Yeah. That part I can totally understand, but you must have a face. Now, fried chicken was, well, my mother once mm-hmm. I was coming over and she said, I'm making your favorite. And mm-hmm. I thought, I have a favorite? What's my, well, turned out it was fried chicken. I'm not sure, but whatever. You know, she's my mom, so we'll just mm-hmm. go with it.
She said, I'm going to tell you what your favorite is.
That's right. It is maybe her favorite to cook, because I don't think it is her favorite thing. So you spent a lot of time on this book, both the first draft and writing and polishing and whatnot. Oh, Sharon, who I mentioned before, is now in the chat box saying, yeah, I can't fry chicken either. So
you're not alone. Thank you. Thank you.
What are some of the things, there must be a few things you learned about writing in the process. I mean, going from thinking about it, maybe doing some short pieces to actually putting together and polishing up a finished novel, a full-length novel for publication. You remember any things that maybe you learned along the way that you didn't know before?
I didn't really know all the work that is put into getting it from what's in your mind into something that is, you know, about to be, you know, published. There's a lot of work mm-hmm. behind it. And you have to look at it a bazillion times and you're like sick of it at this point. And you have to remind yourself why you like this book, you know. And so that is, I think, what I really learned was there is a real true business behind writing. And mm-hmm. It sounds great when you're like, I'm going to be a writer. I'm just going to write and just everything's going to be beautiful. And you think that way. Mm-hmm. And then your developmental editor says, oh, but wait, this is what we got to fix. And then your copy editor is, oh, but wait, this line doesn't work. And right. You're just like crushed. But what I also learned was, if I really, really, truly want to get this thing published, I want it to be in the hands of readers, then I want it to be in the best possible shape that it can be. And that means that I'm going to have to swallow my pride. And yes, this is my baby, but I'm also going to have to be able to receive feedback, good feedback, you know, and every feedback that I got was good. But like, I'm going to have to be willing to receive feedback and implement it and think outside of myself. Because, you know, everybody right. is trying to make this successful and not to be too difficult. And so that's really what I learned, is to not take things personally and right. not be oversensitive about my work if I'm serious about getting it out there. So that's what I learned. And it also helps me because, you know, I'm a developmental editor too. And so that's something that I started that after this book was written. So when I became one, I was like, oh yeah. Okay. So now I see what it means from the other side. And now it made me even a better writer, I think, this time around, because I can mm-hmm. think about what might that editor say to me. Let me take myself outside of my author self and make sure that this is as clean as it can be before I send it to them. Though I sent them a hot mess for book two. So I'm just letting you know, that thing is even worse than the first one. So they got their work cut out for them in this one. I expect lots of feedback. So I'm trying to prepare myself mentally.
Yeah, that too is a common sophomore experience, but I bet you worked through it. I also remember getting my second book back from, this would be back in the late 80s, 90s from Random House, and my editor taking a deep breath and saying, I think this can be salvaged, but oh man, career's over before it's already began. But right. We did salvage it, and it's okay. A lot of people's favorite books. I think what you're describing is sort of transitioning from writing for your own therapy or amusement or indulging yourself to writing for publication. Mm-hmm. I don't think it ever really hit home to me. And again, I'm reaching way back in time, but I remember getting the line edited manuscript of my first book, and it's just dripping with red ink because I didn't really know what I was doing. But I looked at this mess and thought, this is actually going to be published. I mean, people are going to read this. People I know, people I don't know are going to read this. And boy, did I spend a week getting really serious about trying to make that book good after that. That changes the whole landscape.
It does.
We got another question from James, and he wants to know, did you have beta readers when you were?
I did. I maybe had about three people who read parts of it, two people who are actually beyond my beta. So they're like my critical partners because they read the whole entire thing. And so these are two people that I really and truly trust. And they gave me phenomenal advice on, you know, what to do with a certain aspect with the organization that I talk about in my book. And that gave me a whole different perspective. And so these two, the two readers, they're just great. And I'm so lucky to have them. One of them is a published author, and the other one, she is aspiring to be. And so those were two different perspectives, but yeah, I value them, and I try not to send it to too many people because, you know, you get a whole lot of different ideas at that point. So I really keep it to the people that I trust the most to give me honest opinions, and they know my writing style, and so I really value them.
Mm-hmm. Sure. I read on your website, which by the way is very clean, very well done, well executed.
Thank you.
But I read that you listen to audiobooks a lot. Now, what is that, because you're on the go all the time and can't hold the book in your hand, or do you actually prefer the audiobook?
Well, I prefer the audio. I used to be like, you know what? I'll never like an audiobook. And then I became a developmental editor. And then I was like, I have to use an audiobook because when I read it with my hand, with, you know, a paper copy, then to me, it feels like I'm working because I have to read, you know, the authors who are I'm editing, I have to read their work, even though that's not like paper copy or whatever. So I prefer in my leisure time to listen to the story. And I also found like if you have like a really great narrator, man, that story comes alive. And it's like, you know, someone's reading you this story and they're all engaged in it. And sometimes it must have been like a Stephen King or James Patterson, they put some music in that. And that thing scared me. But because I was just boom, and I was like, oh my gosh. And I was like, wow, there's music. I didn't even know that they put music to, you know, some of these audiobooks. So it's like a movie for my ears. And so I really, really love, and it allows me to multitask too. So it doesn't feel like work, and it's just really enjoyable. So I'm an audiobook person. What about you? I know it's I'm interviewing you now. What about you?
Oh, you know, I used to listen to audiobooks all the time when I drove more, like when I did practice law and would sometimes have to go here and there. And even more recent, but of course, especially since the lockdown, I drive so little that I found myself listening to both podcasts and audiobooks using AirPods, like the ones I can see that you're wearing, and do it just, you know, like when I'm fixing breakfast or when I walk my cat or whatever. Just
did you say when walk your cat?
Oh yeah, don't you? I mean, doesn't everyone?
Yeah, I didn't know people did that. Okay.
In a sling. Cool. He doesn't actually walk, but he likes to get out. And I mean, who doesn't? I wouldn't want to be cooped up in this house all day.
Right.
So do you have a favorite, book, audio or otherwise, or maybe when you were a kid, something that stands out that really meant something to you?
Sure. So one book that really stood out, honestly, was To Kill a Mockingbird. Yeah. I don't know, mm-hmm. you know, that everyone, but I loved it. Right. I really, really loved that story. I loved Boo Radley. It was just something of just the way it was beautiful to me. And so that is my favorite book of all time. I love, you know, my favorite authors. I love a Stephen King. I love James Patterson. I just read, like, I love John Grisham. So and Philip Margolin, which, you know, they're fellow lawyers too. So I really like all those kinds of mm-hmm. legal thrillers and all sorts of
great
things. I read across the gamut though. Women's fiction. I'll read some literary fiction if I can get into it. I mean, but it's got to be, I like something that's like pulse pounding and like is really centered around like right here, right now, and things like that. So, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So what's next from you? I think you mentioned a sequel. I don't know if that's going to be your next book. I bet you already signed up for one, though. So what can we be looking for you after Her Name Is Night?
Yeah, so it is a sequel, and that should be coming out next year. And then I'm mm-hmm. just working on some samples for some others that I'm going to sub to the editor and see, you know, what she likes. I have some ideas cooking around, so I think I'll do okay with them. I'm excited about them. Mm-hmm. So
no doubt.
I hope that they'll be excited too, and that I get to do it. It's going to be more a standalone, so it won't be part of part of this. And I don't know if I'll even have another after, you know, book two. I think I would like to have like a three book of Nina Knight. If everyone likes her enough that they want that. So that's kind of what my plan was.
Yeah, that sounds like a great plan to me. Hey, Yasmin, thanks so much for being on the podcast. And I encourage everyone, this is a terrific book. Pre-order it now or pick it up when it's on the stands. You'll be very glad you did. Thanks for being mm-hmm. on the podcast.
Thank you. And also congratulations for your book release yesterday. So
yeah, thanks. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Okay.
Bye.
See you again soon, I hope. All right, everyone. Well, you heard me rattling on about reviews earlier in this show, so I won't do it again. But, you know, we do appreciate that, and it does help people find the podcast. And you also heard me inevitably dropping the plug about my new book, Exposed, which just as we record this hit the stands yesterday, no longer a pre-order. You can get the real deal. Jesse's showing it with the first book in the series, Splitsville, and now the new one, the second Kinsey Rivera book, where she gets in even more trouble, if you can imagine such a thing. And that's called Exposed. Let me also say that Yasmin made it clear how much, you know, people having her writing group and beta readers meant to her. If you're writing or aspiring to write, join our Facebook group, the Red Sneaker Writers Group, so you can get in between updates on what's going on in the world between podcasts. Keep writing, Red Sneaker Writers, and remember, you cannot fail if you refuse to quit. See you next time.